We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this woman, not traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
So if we could just kick off, so I think became first aware of your work on Twitter, and your handle is OSMI, Open Source Mental Illness.
Yeah, on Twitter, it's OSMI Help, H-E-L-P. And so we have a nonprofit 501c3 corporation called Open Sourcing Mental Illness. And so that's where the OSMI comes from. And originally, OSMI was a speaking campaign. It really was that way up until recently when we formed an official legal entity and as a nonprofit. And then you may or may not know, you probably do know that you can be a nonprofit, that's fine. But to get the tax exempt status, you have to file for that with the IRS to get this 501c3 status. And so we received that as well. So we're a nonprofit, 501c3 legal corporation. But it really started, I mean, I've been, go all the way back, I've been getting treatment for mental health stuff, primarily depression and anxiety. And later when I was an adult, I was diagnosed with ADHD. And I've been getting treatment for that since I was 13 years old. So it's been something I've been dealing with my whole life, basically. And I'm 41 now. So you're talking about, almost 30 years.
And vocationally, you're a coder in technology primarily, or?
Yes, I've been a web developer for about 20 years. I started doing it in college, probably 1995, 1996. And this was before they had things like coder boot camps and stuff that actually taught you how to do it in school. They did not have any of that stuff. So like a lot of people sort of from that period, it was all self-taught, you know, and I just learned how to do that stuff. I have a minor in computer science, which I was not very good at. I was terrible, honestly, but I barely got that. But I was an English major, an English creative writing major. And so... you know, that was what I did there. But yeah, I mean, I've been a web developer for about 20 years. Right now, I am the CTO of a company called Graph Story, which is a database as a service for graph databases, basically hosted, you know, managed database hosting for graphs. But that, I mean, that is pertinent in that I have a team at Graph Story that thinks that what I'm doing is important and gives me the ability to speak at conferences and take time to do that stuff, whereas a lot of companies might not. A lot of companies might not say, well, you know, that doesn't really necessarily help us, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm part of that team. I have a very good team there, and I like to mention that, at least, that I couldn't do what I'm doing without their support with that.
So let's maybe talk a little bit about what OSMI does.
Yeah, sure. So the idea with OSMI just in general is that it's an organization that's dedicated to raising awareness and educating with real information and providing resources to support mental wellness in the tech and open source communities. And the way that plays out is we do a few different things. We give talks at conferences, and over the past 4 years, I've spoken at 50 to 60 different tech conferences. I've given talks at lots of different places, WordPress, Ruby conferences, PHP conferences. I've spoken at O'Reilly's OzCon a couple times, lots of different tech conferences. So that's a big part of what we do. We also conduct research. We've done two different annual surveys, both of which had over 1,000 respondents, to measure what attitudes were about mental health in the workplace and what fears people had, what experiences people have had, and things like that. We found almost no information about mental health issues specifically related to tech professionals in technology workplaces. And I kind of sometimes I worry about saying the tech industry is easy, but every company is a tech company now. Every company is driven by tech, so it's hard to think. But there are definitely these tech workplaces, there's tech environments that people work in, these environments that are sort of tech oriented. And then also, so I kind of say technical tech professionals. So people who are coders, people who are designers, people who are project managers, people who are DevOps people, you know, including, you know, executive teams, HR teams and stuff like that. And the specific things about dealing with and managing those kinds of things. And so we've collected lots of information about that and are doing that kind of work where so far no one else has really done that. So we're creating some of the first information available about that specific to the tech community. We also create documentation, so in the form of handbooks and also video presentations, specifically to assist companies in making supportive environments for those impacted by mental health issues. That was one of the things that, as I was speaking, got lots of feedback about, got lots of, you know, requirements where people saw that there's a problem. I could make a good case that, yes, there's an issue here. Prevalence is very high. Even if you just look at the general population, you're talking about 20% of the general population is dealing with something like this. So, and our research would indicate, but I have to be a little careful because our research is self-selective. People opt to answer these questions. We haven't had as many opportunities. We haven't had opportunities that we'd like to, but we haven't had opportunities yet to say, we're going to give this survey to like everybody in this company and everybody in this company, and we're going to see what comes back. But so there's a self-selection bias, they call that. And I'm not an expert on this stuff, but I know what that is. And where you people are more likely, because they're interested in mental health issues, are more probably more likely to answer the questions.
Sure. But 20% prevalence is actually probably lower than the general population.
So 20% is the general population.
Okay.
Our prevalence in what we have gotten information from in our survey responses is that it is 50 to 55% based on the geographic distribution. Worldwide, from everybody, the people who responded to our survey, and this is, it's not like 20 people. In our last survey, we have had almost 1,500 people respond. And the rate of people saying, I've been diagnosed by a medical professional with a mental health disorder was 50%.
Wow.
That is enormously high.
Yes, it is.
Enormously high. Now, again, you have to remember this is self-selection bias, da-da-da-da-da. Anecdotally, and with that so far, my thinking is, and our thinking I think you can safely say is, there's a lot of indication that that there's at least a prevalence of some things that are higher in this group than are in the general population. Okay. But the reason you do all this is because by researching specifically this group, you can learn more about how to help this group specifically as opposed to how we help just general population folks. Maybe there's things specifically about this group where there's, say, a higher prevalence of certain kinds of conditions, where there's concerns about these kinds of things in this kind of a workplace. How do you treat that in terms of things like what kinds of workspaces are popular? How do you manage people's time? How do you manage time off? All these kinds of things. And some of these things are specific to sort of coder types, to programmers. And, you know, there's certain tendencies and certain similarities that they tend to share in terms of the workspaces they have, the kind of work that they do, et cetera, et cetera.
So you're kind of, you know, reverse engineering this in a sense of your why, the reason that you're doing all of this is to make more supportive environments for technical workers who are struggling with mental illness.
Right. So we do this research. And then in addition, what we do is we create resources for both employers and employees. So we have two handbooks, one for employers and one for employees, that focus specifically on ADA law, Americans with Disability Act laws, and its application in the workplace regarding mental health. That is, and there's specific stuff that I think a lot of people don't realize that say, And they keep, it's a fuzzy thing, but the ADA law states that you have to make a, if you employ more than 15 people, you have to make a quote unquote reasonable accommodation for people in a workplace who are suffering from a disability. And that includes mental health issues.
And when you talk about this with people, and you know, certainly you've written about this and thought about it a lot, what are just the kind of quick bullet point things that seem to be most important in creating environments that are sort of healthy workplaces for people who are struggling with depression, anxiety, or other mental health concerns?
I think the biggest issue, the two biggest things I see are, number one, I think people don't realize the impact that it has, and they either don't realize the prevalence, because most people who are suffering from a mental health issue, they don't present as sick, we say. You don't look at them and say, oh man, you should go home. You don't look good, right? I know, and I can tell anybody else who deals with this stuff can tell you, you feel like you have to get really good at hiding these things, because you feel like in the absence of positive reassurance that it is okay to talk about this stuff, maybe it doesn't even have to be your specific things, but that mental health is not a character, mental health issues aren't a character flaw, that they're actually a health issue, just like diabetes, or just like I've got the flu, or just like those kinds of things, that you get very good at hiding it. You get good at hiding it because your expectation is, in the absence of any other information, that there's something wrong with that. That's a cultural thing that we have.
So is one of the things that you would like to change in our public spaces, the stigma or the predilection towards hiding that is so prominent among individuals and communities? I mean,
right. At the end of the day, the stigma prevents people from getting help. And it also, feeling like you have to hide something, there's good evidence from another social studies and or social science studies and things like that, that indicates that when you feel like you have to hide something from people, well, and it kind of makes sense, you are less comfortable in your social groups. You feel like you have to hide something, and there's an underlying anxiety you're constantly dealing with. And there's some pretty good evidence that those kinds of things and that disconnect that you have affects you not just psychologically in terms of the choices that you make and things like that, but physiologically as well. So that's a key issue. The second thing is that workplaces' abilities to demonstrate that they are concerned about the well-being of their employees, and that includes mental health issues as well as physical health issues. People who feel respected and that their employers care about their well-being are going to be more productive, and they're going to be more loyal. So it is not only the case that these are good things to do in the sense of sort of a charitable act or something where it's like, well, that's a nice thing to do. This is, in fact, something that an organization should do because it is in the best interest of the survival of the organization. Sick people don't work as well. Healthy people work better. And if we think about the kinds of jobs that we've really enjoyed, the kinds of jobs that we felt good about, and I bring this up every time I speak, I say, I know that the jobs I look back at and said, that was really good. It is not about usually the work I was doing. It is about the people who I interacted with and how they felt about me and how I felt about them and the trust levels that we had. If I am in a position where I feel like I have to hide some aspect of myself, I have to hide an issue that I'm dealing with, I have to hide, say, a chronic disorder that I deal with every day, which that's the case with me. I have chronic mental health issues. I deal with them every day. I work hard through them, and that is a burden that I have to bear. If I feel like I have to hide that stuff, I don't want to work for those companies. Those are the worst examples that I have, where I felt like companies were not empathetic and or did very little to really be supportive. Oftentimes, though, I just want to clarify, I don't think that most companies say, oh, I just don't care about people. I think most people want people to be happy and healthy. The problem is, I think for the most part, they don't know what to do. I think they don't know how to respond to these situations, and they frequently don't realize that there's that anybody has any issues until suddenly maybe somebody has a like shows a dramatic like sort of a breakdown situation or is in a very clear crisis situation. But that's sort of like saying, I assume nobody has heart disease until they have a heart attack.
So what do you do? I mean, what would you say to business owners or the C's of the world, the CEOs and CTOs and, you know, the folks that are making decisions and are charged with running organizations, you know, how would you like to see them act to, you know, kind of help prevent these breakdowns that are often the only telltale sign that there's a problem when we get to the point of a breakdown? What do you say about prevention?
You don't want to get there. That's the point. Now, I can get it. There's a lot of detail that would be beyond what I could do here. And there's better. We have experts on our board and our teams that deal with this stuff. But the first thing you have to do is you have to say that it is a key value of our organization that we want healthy, happy, and productive individuals. That is going to make some decisions for you. Now, some of those things you might say, okay, based on that, how do I do X, Y, and Z? And then you kind of sort of get the devils into details. But there are certainly things that I can are detailed about that, like your expectations about work hours, about the tendency to sort of like, let's do everything to keep people at the office, or let's have a big open space that and then that helps with communication, right? For some people, that's actually a horrible thing. They need space themselves, and in fact, open. This is a tiny example, but open layouts are actual for some people like me. I can deal with them sometimes, but I also need spaces where I can go and hide, basically, and be like, I need to work on my own. I need these not distracted. And people who maybe have more anxiety issues, which is by far the most prevalent in the general population. Mental health issue is our anxiety disorders, especially if they have social anxiety disorders or things like that. Being stuck in a room with bunches of other people that they can't get away from ever, that kind of sucks. In general, I think there's this attitude of I want healthy, happy folks because not only because I think that that's the right thing to do, but also because that is going to make us a stronger, better company. We're going to have people who feel valued and therefore can trust us. Trust our organization. So you go in with that idea, and that has to include not just like, we're going to have yoga, and which is helpful, and we're going to have, you know, we're going to do physical stuff, but it also has to deal with mental health stuff too, because the World Health Organization, in a study they released in 2008, they did the study in 2004, and in 2008, they released a study. It's called the Global Burden of Disease. And in that study, they have this metric called disease burden, which basically measures the impact of a disease on a population. And they stated that in all areas, and that means everywhere in the world, that psychiatric disorders were the leading cause of disease burden, higher than cardiovascular disease and higher than cancer. So this is not something that it's like, oh, well, there's only a few people. It's just every once in a while, some person freaks out a little bit. And I don't know, maybe they're just a little kooky. No, there is. It is by far the largest. Right. And it impacts people.
Costing millions and millions of dollars each year.
And costing millions and millions of dollars. Sick people don't work as well. So you need them to be healthy. So how do you do that? Well, we are one of the, as far as I know, we're one of the few organizations that is creating freely available Creative Commons information that specifically addresses this. And we have an ebook handbook that you can get on LeanPub or you can just get off our website, which is osmihelp.org. And that is specifically aimed at HR professionals and executives that says, this is how you get started creating a supportive work environment. Here's some examples of what other companies have done. And this is going to kick you off, and this is going to give you ideas for what stuff works well. The second thing we've also done is we just released a video presentation on YouTube, on our YouTube channel, and that specifically is aimed at executives to explain what this stuff is, why it matters, why you should care, and how you get started. We are building up our teams to be able to engage more effectively with corporations. And in fact, we're starting up a corporate partner program specifically because, one, we need money to keep doing what we do because we give everything away for free, right? And that's part of our open source idea is that we use open source approaches, the community values of collaborative learning and sharing so that these things are available widely. But we want to be able to help organizations and be able to help one-on-one. So one, we're always happy to answer questions as much as we can, but there's going to, at some point, it's like, well, how do I specifically do that in my organization? Well, we can get you in touch with folks who say consult on these issues in particular. But in general, one of the key things that I think people think about, you know, there's issues like time off. How easy can I go in and say, look, I am having a tough time. My anxiety is really high right now. I need to take a day off. Is that okay? Are you going to view that? Like, if somebody comes into your office and says that, are you going to be suspicious of that or not? Right. And I think that that's a thing where I think a lot of people are kind of like, well, I sort of don't get that. Or they have to get comfortable with that notion, particularly if they felt like they don't deal with that themselves. But really, as it comes down to empathy. It comes down to effective communication principles. And one of the key things that I would highly advocate anyone in a leadership position does, and we advocate this very strongly and we have for years, is there's a program called Mental Health First Aid. And it's offered in 22 different countries. The U.S. is one of them. And there are instructors all over the country. I took it here locally at my Mental Health America chapter that's here in Fort Tippecanoe County in Indiana. And it cost me $50. And it cost me 8 hours of time. And I learned a lot. I've been somebody who's dealt with this for 30 years. What I learned is how to identify if somebody's potentially in a mental health crisis. And even if they're not, how to interact with somebody where I listen empathetically, I respond in the way that is most effective to help them and help them seek treatment. I don't try to solve their problem for them. I don't try to fix things for them. But I go in prepared with the ideas that I have to be ready to say, oh, I know these resources available in our community. These are resources that I can help you with. And I'm not judging you. I don't think you're doing anything wrong. I want to help. And so that kind of communication, which I think oftentimes requires some learning.
Sure. It's not innate.
Right. And there's things like I often would say to people, oh, I understand. One of the things I learned in that class is that some people respond if they feel understood. There are some people who will say in their mind, there is no way you understand what I'm going through. And they are likely to shut down if you say, I understand, because they're basically suspicious of people who ask that. So there's things like that. There's things like what kinds of words and phrasing works well. And what kinds of things don't work as well. And it gets into that. You go through scenarios and what it's sort of like role play to interact. I feel very strongly about mental health first aid. I think it is incredibly helpful, not only in these mental health crises, but just how do I listen empathetically to people?
And it sounds like for you, it has made you more confident in your ability to effectively engage with someone who is in a mental health crisis. Like the switch in your confidence and your availability for these kinds of conversations might make the most difference. You know, you're less awkward, you're less anxious.
Well, yeah, I think people, because of the lack of information, because we don't discuss these things, people don't know what to do. And you have to fill that gap, which has been caused by stigma, with positive affirmation that people don't have to be afraid to talk about it, and with real information about how you can most effectively help people. And that is what OSMI is trying to do on several levels for both employers and employees. And that's our key thing, is there are good awareness programs and talking about this kind of stuff, but we're trying to take it a little bit farther than that. It's not just about awareness, which is huge. Awareness frees up and makes a lot of people feel safe when they see somebody speaking openly about mental health issues. But there's more to it. People need actionable information about how I can most effectively help the people around me. Because it is absolutely the case that there are people around you that you are friends with or your colleagues with or who are struggling with these things right now. and you don't know it. You have no idea because they don't tell you. They don't tell you and they don't talk about it because they're afraid to. And that is a big part of what we're trying to address and fill in that sort of empty thing that's caused by the fear with real information.
Well, you're trying to equip a community to respond to the needs of its own, essentially.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And I am not an expert medical historian, but I cannot think of any health issue that has ever been solved effectively by not talking about it.
No, I don't think so.
I don't know of any. And, you know, we talk more about cancer. We talk more about diabetes. We talk more about cardiovascular disease. We talk more about all of these health things that we talk very openly about. And we do tons of work to raise awareness and tell people what to do and how to interact and what are the choices that they need to make and how to get help with that. This is as big or a bigger burden of disease, according to the World Health Organization, than all of those. And yet we barely talk about it.
Yeah, very true.
So we're trying to fill that gap in this community, fill that hole in this community so that we can provide, so we have happier, healthier community members who are more productive and find their jobs more rewarding and find their lives more rewarding. That's what we want to do.
What's your hunch as to why there is potentially this much higher rate of reported mental illness in the tech community than in the general population? I know it's not perfectly an answerable question, so I'm asking your opinion, your guess.
It's anecdotal, right? And this is my guess. I think there's a few things, but ultimately I think it's kind of like this. There are attributes that of certain kinds of things about the way certain people's brains work that either cause them to gravitate towards this kind of work or just make them better at it, which maybe is why they gravitate to that kind of work. Let's say somebody who has a relatively fast sort of thinking brain that makes connections quickly, but also maybe has some social anxiety issues, is probably more likely to gravitate to a job that doesn't typically require lots of face-to-face one-on-one interaction. And if they enjoy problem solving, things like that, boy, being a developer that's what you do. You solve problems all day long, right? And that, of course, contributes to this sort of stereotype of developers who are really good at solving problems but are terrible about communicating. And I think it's a stereotype because there's some truth to that. And it's different than, say, well, who are the kind of people who end up in sales? Well, there's certain kinds of attributes that lend you to being good at that job. There's certain kinds of attributes that lend you to being good at this kind of a job. And I know that for me, the stuff that I deal with has made me better at certain aspects of my job than a lot of other people. And I just know that. And I know that because I realize that there's stuff that I think about and connections that I can make faster that I think are obvious. And then I realized after several years that, no, it wasn't obvious because there's not as many people making those kinds of connections. Now, there's a lot of other things I'm not great at. I'm not the best developer by any extent, but there's certain things I'm really good at. And I'm good at those things because of the way my brain works. But the way my brain works also causes and contributes to all of these issues that I have in terms of how I get through day-to-day life, anxiety issues, focus issues, things like that. And in and of itself, neither good nor bad. It is how I manage it. In my day-to-day life, there are very good aspects to it that help me a lot. And there's very bad aspects that hurt me a lot. And I have to deal with that equally. And I deal with that equally by engaging in treatment, my own treatment, and continuing to go through that process. But I would say, yeah, I think ultimately, yes, I think there's a tendency for certain kinds of things because certain kinds of personality types and the way that people's brains work, it will tend to work better. Like there are certain attributes you see in, say, entrepreneurs, people who have a higher tolerance for risk, for example, are more likely to be entrepreneurs than people who have a low tolerance for risk. And that would be one example. right? And so you could say people who have anxiety disorders, who really get certain kinds of anxiety disorders, who really have problems with potential risk and fear and stuff like that, well, they're probably not going to have, they're not going to see as many of those people in entrepreneurial jobs or sort of be in that role. But of course, I've also seen studies. Now, we don't really focus on entrepreneurial types so much, but a lot of entrepreneurial types do tech stuff and end up in executive teams.
Yes.
And there has been some, I know there's been some pretty interesting studies. Again, you have to be kind of, you know, how easy it is to replicate social science studies and things like that. And you have to be a little careful with that. But that some of it was indicating that incidence rates of like depression or anxiety disorders, things like that within entrepreneurs, they, like say by looking, examining like a group of like 100 or 200 tech entrepreneurs, was something like 50%. That's enormous.
Yeah, it has been actually very, very difficult to get good data.
Yeah.
And there's conflicting studies. Like there's a research team in Denmark that does a lot of work on entrepreneurs, and you know, they find that there's higher rates of anxiety in the entrepreneurial community than there is in the, you know, the general population. But Michael Freeman, who's a psychiatrist out of UC San Francisco, you know, didn't find that in his studies. He found that ADHD was much higher in entrepreneurs. So it's a little bit all over the board. And I think it's actually very, very difficult to draw these, you know, sort of like you found in your research of the self-selection bias. It's very difficult to kind of find a really nice synopsis that sort of says this is the prevalence in this community. We just haven't had the funding to conduct a truly high quality controlled scientific experiment to ask these questions. So until we have that, we're just generalizing. Like those of us who work in this world know, kind of, again, anecdotally, or know in the way that wisdom tells us that there are unique mental health concerns in this community. We don't quite have the data that's like rock hard conclusive about what that looks like.
Yeah. And to some extent, maybe you don't need it. Do you need that to motivate you?
I don't need it to do my work. I don't think you need it to do your work. I think we just do our work. But, you know,
I think it's important. And I think that I would love for us to have the funding to bring in people with academic backgrounds to do really good research work on this. And I think we would have some potential for that. And there is a need there, because I think that if you're going to identify, are there differences here? Are there general, you know, would we change generally how we treat things in terms of sort of like, it sounds weird, but to call it a public health concern, if we're going to call it a community health concern, and we're going to say general things about stuff for this community, you want to have data to back that up. But one of the things that I really encourage people to think about is don't think about it on this widespread level. Think about it in this level of what are the social groups you interact with the most? Oftentimes, those are people you work with. Within those groups, you can have incredibly positive and you're probably more influential than you think. And you can have an incredibly positive impact by simply doing things like speaking with compassion and empathy about mental health, just in general, and being an empathetic listener and being a resource to people who need help around you. You can change people's lives that way. I know, because I've had people repeatedly tell me that in my social groups, because I'm just willing to talk about mental health stuff, that has changed how they think about it. It has made them give some more consideration to their own self-care and self-awareness of these things. It has made more people willing to seek out help that otherwise they probably wouldn't. And that's not a matter of me going out and speaking to 100 or 500 or 1,000 people and reaching a bunch of people. That is changing people's lives directly, one person at a time. And that, I think, is where everybody can be incredibly influential and be in a huge have a huge positive impact on the lives of the people around them. So that's what I try to leave people with, is that you can just do this. Like, tell people that they matter. Tell people you value them. Tell people you're willing to listen, and you listen empathetically. I really encourage you to take that mental health first aid class, but listen empathetically. Don't necessarily need to solve problems for them. In fact, you should kind of avoid it, because you're not a medical expert, you're not trained, and you probably should not try to solve medical problems for people unless you are. But what you should do is listen empathetically and encourage them to seek help and help them get treatment. And so however that is, however you work with that.
And I think, you know, to just end the podcast portion of our conversation, you know, you and your team have put up so many great resources that are free and widely available. So for people who are asking these questions, whether you are a tech worker or a leader in an organization, there are lots of resources that are available, both in video and handbook form. And sounds like people can follow your work on Twitter and also just sort of get informed by going to your website.
Yeah. And we really encourage people to ask us, hey, this is happening. Got any ideas for me? You know, or encourage, what are the kinds of things that would help them, either as an individual or as somebody who runs an organization or as a leader, if it is in a leader or management position in an organization. We want to hear from you because we want to know where to put that work in. So that's going to be most effective at helping you create these kind of safer environments for people.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.